Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready.
Vamanos!
To explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping! Oh, man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Casey Bartley.
And we're here to recap a pretty damn good weekend for the two marquee Purdue sports, Purdue football, of course, with the victory over Northwestern. And probably more importantly, and what we're going to cover more in depth tonight, are the two Purdue basketball victories over two ranked programs. First over North Carolina on Saturday, and then today, Sunday, as we're recording, a thrilling victory over the fifth-ranked Villanova Wildcats? Am I right?
Wildcats.
Yeah, I was like, there's like nine teams there.
There's no major team that's mascot makes less sense or they're less tied to. I think it's because they have a great nickname. Nova is just like the best.
Nova, yeah.
Like, it should be the Villanova Novas.
Yes, exactly. Well, we've decided it. We've
changed the name. Home field, make those shirts.
I wouldn't buy that shirt, but I mean, it's a better shirt than the Villanova Wildcats, which I honestly don't even know what their Wildcat looks like.
Nope, I don't either.
I have no idea. I can tell you what the Kentucky Wildcat looks like, but not the Villanova Wildcat. So
I couldn't tell you the Kentucky one either.
I mean, I could give you a rough estimate of it. So
I mean, I can tell you it looks like a cat.
There you go. See, you've already got it halfway. So Casey, I know normally I start out these things with a question, but I know you told me you have one for me. I have no idea what it is, but you said it would lead to a nice discussion. So let's do it.
That's right. All right, Ledman, you are granted a time machine.
Oh, I love this already.
You have two trips. You can get there and come back, or come to a different time. We'll let you get home to your family. That's less important. You get to go back in time and grab any Purdue basketball player, and you get to plant them on any Purdue team. Who are you taking and for what team?
Okay, so I can take – so in essence, I have three trips, really.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can get the third trip and go back home.
Get home. Yeah. Okay. Oh, man. So I'm trying to – because I mean, the obvious answer is I want to take somebody onto the 2017-2018 team that lost in the Elite Eight. Was that – I can't get my gears
right.
Yeah,
the 2018.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what that team needed to get them over the hump.
Like, my answer is that
missing.
Team.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think maybe an additional three-point shooter because, I mean, we had Klein, we had Edwards, but I'm wondering if we could have thrown a third person on that team if it would have given us additional space. So I would need a shooter that can also play defense.
There's a lot of answers that could even, like, give us national titles, but there is one correct answer.
I mean, obviously, I think the correct answer is you go take Glenn Robinson and bring him onto that team, but I don't know how he'd fit with that team. I mean, obviously, he's if not the greatest, one of the greatest, the greatest.
You know what? That's a fair caveat. Let's take Glenn Robinson out of the equation.
Okay.
Because he is the, obviously you put him on any team. So we'll take Glenn Robinson out.
I mean, it seems like my time machine would not be working very hard, but I feel like I would go back and take Dakota Mathias and put him on that team.
You're aiming so low.
I'm, well, what else, what other position, like what would you do?
Etwan Moore.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
you just let Etwan play point guard.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, Etwan played with the ball in his hands a lot.
That's fine.
So, yeah, but so did Carson on that team. So
that's fine.
Are you taking the ball out of Carson's hands when he had such an incredible tournament?
I'm going to let him have one-on-ones because there's no way you can double him like Virginia did that, doubling Carson and forcing Carson to shoot like 40-footers.
You can't do that if Etwan's the
other guard.
But he hit the 40-footers.
No,
he did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess my thing is I don't want to take somebody who is getting the ball out of Carson's hands because he played like such a maniac with the ball in his hands on those.
Etwan played without the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, he, you know, granted he had Lewis Jackson for a little bit of time.
And Robbie Hummel?
Yeah, but I mean, Hummel.
And Juwan Johnson?
No, you're completely changing my argument. My point is he had Lewis Jackson on the team who was obviously the point guard, but even then Etwan played with the ball a lot while he was at Purdue. So I wouldn't want to take him because I would worry about the who's going to be carrying the ball and who's going to be making the plays with the ball in their hands versus him and Carson. So I think that's why I would argue for Dakota. Because Dakota is such a smart player, too, so you're adding another shooter, a great defender, and a good passer on that team, and I think that would just be a huge addition. I mean, you can never have too many players like that.
What does Dakota do better than Etwan Moore?
Well, again,
the answer is nothing. Really,
yes. Okay, I grant you that.
So,
but,
and Etwan Moore has shown throughout his entire NBA career can be perfectly good not having the ball in his.
Yes, and I mean that's fair, but I'm trying to figure out who fits best on that team.
So
and
here's
you are probably right. I mean you probably throw a guy like Etwan on there, but let's see, who was the starting four for that 2017 Eifert, right?
Yeah.
And I mean obviously you would say Hummel is probably a higher ceiling than Eifert, but Eifert fits so well on that team, you just hate to take pieces away because you wonder what the domino effect of that's going to be.
Yeah, a little bit of concern. I just think the answer was Etwan for me, and it was kind of a question to talk about Etwan a little more, just because I think out of all the players that have played Purdue, there's no one that put more on the table without taking anything off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and he's really underrated because he was a quiet player in a sense. Like, he didn't often make the huge dagger plays, but you'd look up at the scoreboard and he'd have 20 and he'd have, you know, a bunch of rebounds. He always took care of the ball. He played good defense. And it's a shame because it did feel like he got overshadowed by Juwan and by Robbie so often.
Yeah. And he was the best player out of all three.
Yeah. He was the most complete player for sure.
He was. And I think, you know, he's always his assist rate for his career, incredibly consistent.
When you say career, do you mean only at Purdue? You're talking NBA. Okay.
19.4, 19.9, 19.8, 20.9.
That's unbelievable.
You don't think of him as someone, you know, dishing out assists all the time. But that's what he did.
Yeah.
He was, at the same time, able to also be one of the best shooters, one of the best guys with the ball in his hand. So, like, just uncharacteristically. Talk about smart. He's probably the smartest player we've had at Purdue.
Yeah. I mean, he was
just the
everything
way he plays
about
basketball.
Everything about him was incredible. I mean, I know Travis went, he got to calling him the red button because it was just anytime you need anything, Etwan would find a way to get it for you. Because he was just so talented. And it's really no surprise when you look at the three baby boilers, you know, Robbie, Juwan, and Etwan. It's really no surprise that Etwan has had the best NBA career. And, you know, he's still in the NBA to this day.
Mm-hmm. And you think about, so they were able to focus up on Carson and Ryan. Now you throw Etwan Moore into it. What are you doing?
I mean, like I said, you're probably not wrong. I'm just trying to figure out the best fit for the team. Because so much of what Painter does with his teams now is try to figure out the pieces that fit together. He's not just getting, you know, the five best players in the country to try to come to Purdue. He's looking for who fits on the team and how they fit together. So I think, granted, Etwan was obviously less ball heavy than Carson. I think if you put the two on the team, I just wonder how they work together. But again, you are probably right. But Dakota was the first one that came to my mind.
So those of you listening, answer this question. Who would you rather have, Dakota Mathias or Etuan Moore?
Or name a third player. I mean, it, you don't have to go.
Not Glenn Robinson. Not Glenn Robinson. That's the cheat code.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's.
That's not a fun question.
No, because you could say that with anybody. Right. Oh, I will just bring Glenn Robinson to this team. Or, you know what? Another good answer is you take Carson Edwards and you put him on the Glenn Robinson team that lost in the Elite Eight.
Or because, the Baby Boiler team.
Yeah. Because if you give that Glenn Robinson team, granted, you know, Glenn injured his back and he didn't do so well in that last game. But, I mean, if you give them a lights-out shooter like Carson Edwards.
With a hell of a 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a great combination. Plus, they got Konzo Martin on that team as well. You know, it would just – they would have won that game and they would have moved on to the Final Four. So, yeah, it – you know, oh, my gosh. I could just do this all day.
Yeah, we're not – so part of the, we're not talking basketball quite yet, but part of the reason this question came to my mind because – every team Purdue's had kind of feels like we're like not even a full player. Sometimes it's like half a player away. I don't think that's a problem this year.
No, I don't think so either. So we are going to, like I said, we're going to talk about football first. It was furthest away, and that basketball game today against Villanova deserves plenty of time. So
let's give I forgot to mention this pre-podcast. Let's give a little shout out to the Lady Boilers soccer team.
Yeah.
Took the number three team in the nation, Notre Dame. All the way to double, or not even past double overtime.
Past double overtime.
1-1 tied game after double overtimes. Penalty kicks. We lose 4-3 in a heartbreaker. But damn, those Boilers were good. Hell of a run. That Purdue women's soccer team is on the ride.
Yeah, so kudos to the women's soccer team. Hopefully we'll see them back in the NCAA tournament next year. It's obviously you know, quite an accomplishment even to get there given the program's history. So hopefully they continue to go further and further. So. Now, going back to football, Purdue defeated Northwestern 32-14. Honestly, it was kind of a boring game. The thing that stands out, the thing that stands out to me most is just the horrendous nature of the field on Wrigley. And if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know I'm going to say this. I told you. Why? Why are we playing football games at a baseball stadium where you have to bring in a new field? You have to – I don't even know when they put it in. It probably was just a couple weeks ago. But you're covering –
I doubt it was that long, Ledman. They do these things like a day or two beforehand.
I agree. I was trying to be generous. So you're covering an infield. You're covering a mound. You're taking out bases. I mean, you're reconfiguring an entire infield and outfield of a baseball stadium to put in a football field, and we saw the results. It was absolute trash. I mean, it probably ended up working in Purdue's favor given the strange onside kick that we had to start the second half that was completely unintentional and caused by our kicker slipping. But there is absolutely no reason anybody should play a game on a baseball stadium if that's the kind of field you're going to bring in.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's cool to play it in a different stadium, all that, that's fine, but it has to be a safe environment. We are lucky that no one lost their ACLs. How he managed to make the kicks he did after doinking the first one, losing his footing. The fact he made other kicks later, Finneran, was impressive, but those kickoffs were all scary. Worked out for us, but yeah, there is no reason to make a spectacle out of something that's not safe. It was a gimmick to be a gimmick, and if I'm an opposing coach of Northwestern, no. Do I want to play at Wrigley? No.
Yeah, right. If they come to you next year and they're like, hey, guess what? We're going to play a game at Wrigley, and we thought we might, you know, ask you guys if you want to do it. Absolutely not.
Nope.
And I do want to say Finneran is not the kickoff specialist. It's actually Chris Van Eekeren who does the kickoffs. So he was the one with the unintentional onside kick. Finneran, you know, he did, you know, have a pretty good game. He missed the first field goal, but wound up 4 of 5. So the red zone struggles continue to be an issue for Purdue. But, you know, Finneran, who I have incorrectly pronounced as Finneran for about this entire podcast, it wound up 4 of 5. The first one, I think you can probably chalk it up to the field. I mean, he kicked it so far out of range of the of the uprights.
Just lost.
You have
footing.
To think it was a slip. So he was obviously key in this game. I mean, he wound up with 12 points just on field goals, and that nearly tied Northwestern. So look at some of the stats. O'Connell had another great game, 29 of 39 for 423 yards. And that's great considering Northwestern, I believe, was second or third ranked pass defense in the league. He had three touchdowns. Again, no interceptions.
Just incredible. So
yeah, I mean, he's just turned everything around. It's been crazy.
I've been thinking about this pretty much all weekend, and I think it's time that you and me, this is going to be hypocrisy. I will accept if the listeners do not accept this, but why the hell didn't Brown just start him from the start of the season? So, if this is what was there and he knew it, why did we play around with Jack Plummer?
Right. I do wonder, because obviously Casey and I were both Plummer guys to start the season,
and
so
we have
no leg to
stand on. We were wrong.
Here. But the fact of the matter is, I don't watch practice. I'm not there every day. Like, if AOC had this in him, what are we doing? I mean, he's gone four or five games now with an interception, and
his
just
last
nothing.
Four game totals. He's got to be averaging like. I could look this up. I'm not good at quick math, but it's right around 70% completions, 400 yards, three touchdowns a game, no interception.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, two of those games were against top five opponents.
Yeah, and he won one of them. Granted, you know, the Ohio State game is a whole aberration, but
that wasn't on AOC.
No, not
AOC was good.
Not. Absolutely not. So I don't know. There is a question now of whether AOC is going to come back next year, given the COVID year and everything else. I mean, obviously it's selfish of us to say it'd be great if he came back, but from his perspective, if he ever believed he could go to the NFL, I don't think his stock could ever be higher than it is after this season. I mean, if he plays in the IU game and whatever bowl game Purdue goes to, if he plays at this level, there's absolutely no reason he can't be drafted.
I think he looks like a backup. He makes quick decisions, has a decent arm.
You know who makes tons of money in the NFL? Backup quarterbacks.
It's a great life. Orton had a lot of fun.
Hey, Kyle Orton was a starter for quite a few years.
He was, but towards the end there, like, he came back like halfway through a season to make $7 million to be the Cowboys. Like, it's a good life.
I mean, Chase Daniel is another one. He's played like five games and he's made $16 million, you know?
Oh, way more than six. Chase Daniels is up to like 70, pretty sure.
Well, a quick Google search tells me it's like 16.
You're wrong.
You're arguing with Google. You're not arguing with me. Yeah, it must be because, that's got to be
24.
Wrong.
$24.3 million over his career.
Oh, 34. Now it says 34.3. I don't know.
He signed a big contract just like a year ago.
Long story short, you can make quite a living as a backup quarterback. And if AOC believes he can get a backup quarterback job, which with these numbers, there's no reason he can't. He should absolutely leave. But selfishly, we want him to stay.
$34 million as of March of 2020.
Yeah, what the heck? I don't know
that's another year worth of thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's just been slinging the ball all over the field. David Bell had 12 catches, 101 yards, so he again was over 100. But the great thing about the receiving core is with so much attention paid to David Bell, Milton Wright went absolutely insane. Three touchdowns, all on long balls, I believe all to the left side of the field. Eight receptions, 213 yards, and the guy just he went off, and he's really turned his season around. After the first couple games where he had drops, his hands looked unsure. Ever since probably game three or game four, he's never looked back, and he's really put our minds at ease, I think, as to who's going to be the number one receiver next year and what kind of threat he can be.
Do you think that the Northwestern secondary thought there was like an offsides call on football? The same way soccer is. do you think it was illegal that they had that a receiver could make two moves in the same?
Let me just say this. I go back to Ted Lasso. I don't fully understand the offside rule in soccer. So I know what you're trying to say, and I get it on one level. But you know, if we go too deep into it, I'm just gonna have to say words that don't really make sense. So
do you want me to try to explain offsides?
I do not.
It's really not that hard of a you passed law school.
I have no interest in learning. Plus, I want to talk about the fact that the Purdue defense at one point in this game there was a drive by Northwestern that was four plays and four sacks.
I like that a lot.
That was crazy.
It was a lot of fun.
I don't think I've ever in my life seen a drive like that.
Yeah, our defense is good. It's really nice when we're not playing Ohio State.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do when you're not playing probably one of the top two teams in the nation.
Those were also our only four sacks of the game. Ledman, can you name the four people that had the sack?
Without looking,
Karloftis can get. Yep.
Karloftis got one. Mitchell got one.
No.
No, he didn't? Oh, see, I'm already out.
You're just naming the guys you know.
Yes.
Because I honestly barely know the names of these guys.
That's
Kidron Jenkins?
Sure, yeah.
Who played well, had four tackles. Jack Sullivan, it was his only tackle of the game. Joe Anderson, also his only tackle.
Yeah, I would not have gotten those.
I didn't think so. I wouldn't also have not.
No. And what quarter was that in? Because you're obviously looking at the play-by-play. Was that in the fourth?
Oh, I'm not looking at the play-by-play. It was the fourth. It was the fourth quarter.
Okay.
It was the last drive that mattered in any way for Northwestern. Turned out not mattering much for
them. Yeah, I mean, the here it was. Yeah, it was. It was actually a 12-play drive, but Purdue had four sacks in a row after a first and 10. Sacked by Joe Anderson, loss of two. Kendrick Jenkins, loss of five. Jack Sullivan, loss of nine. And then on fourth and 26, Karloftis sacked him for a loss of 6 yards. So, I mean, that was just an incredible series. And then, of course, we also had the interception that really ended the game from Dedrick Mackey, just put the game out of reach. So, I mean, I don't really think there's much else to say on this. Purdue now 7-4, 5-3 in the conference, which if you remember at the beginning of this podcast, we talked about best case scenario for Purdue football. And I said best case scenario was 6-6, and Casey laughed at me thinking my best case scenario at 6-6 was rosy and optimistic. So there you go. You're just in training. We need a training montage a la Rocky to see how you're doing. Yeah. You know, Purdue got their seventh win for the first time in the regular season seventh win since 2007, and now has a chance to get their eighth regular season win for the first time since 2006 when Indiana comes to town next week. So
are we supposed to print up eight win shirts? That's what you do, right?
Eight is great. I mean, this season has been one of really high highs and really low lows. You know, we were so very frustrated at the beginning of the year when things started to go off the rails. You know, some bad losses that we'd like to have back, but the way this team has rallied to beat Iowa, to beat Michigan State, and now sit at 7-4, 5-3 in the conference is really just unbelievable. And Casey and I need to eat a lot of crow.
Well, I'll be eating a lot of waffles. I won't have room for crow.
Yeah, that's true. Don't want to add any extra protein.
Yeah, no, I just think the reason I know like this is legitimate and we're kind of here is I have never been more bored at a football game. Not at a game, but watching.
You were not there.
It was boring. I didn't really enjoy any of it, and we won by 18.
Yeah, and it wasn't close.
So it was boring because I was never worried, but also was played in a baseball.
Yes, yeah. The only thing I was worried about was if somebody was going to slip, fall, and hurt their knee. So that was our biggest worry, and just to be able to say that at this point in the season is unbelievable. If you were to time travel back 12 weeks and tell me this, I would not have believed you. I would have slapped you in the face. So there
that's
we go.
Assault.
Yeah. Well, technically it's battery, but you know,
Jesus Christ.
We'll let that go. We'll let that go. So Purdue 7-4, 5-3 in conference. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about Purdue winning the Hall of Fame Classic tip-off. Was that the name of this thing?
Let's go, Boilers!
There we go. Just cut it right there. Back to break. We'll be back.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Ooh, opening a drink.
White Claw, baby.
Oh, did you ever find those White Claw Surge?
I've seen them multiple times. The fact I know I'm an adult now is
you didn't
never grab them.
That's sad. Who knew Casey would be so soft?
I just bet they taste awful.
I'm sure they're awful. So, I don't even like regular White Claw. I don't like hard seltzers really in general.
Oh, I love hard seltzers, but like I don't need tough points for right. Like, the only reason I drink them is because they're enjoyable and crisp and refreshing. If you take that away, why am I drinking a hard seltzer? I'll go drink bourbon.
Right, just give me a shot of something instead.
Yeah,
all right.
Just makes no sense.
All right, you got the North Carolina box score up?
I do.
All right.
Oh, that one? No.
What the fuck other North Carolina box score you think we're going to discuss?
I have the Villanova box score up.
So you just didn't listen at all what I asked?
No, exactly.
Okay, good, good, good.
I have them both.
All right. All right, I'm going to get started here in a sec.
This is the first conversation we've had for mid-break that I'm considering keeping. I'm probably going to do it, so.
Well, we'll see.
Listen closely. As a master painter carefully brushes Benjamin Moore Regal Select down the seam of the wall. It's like poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
This episode is brought to you by Captain Morgan Sliced. Since the dawn of bread, people have known the truth. Sliced is better. That's why new Captain Morgan Sliced went all in on four bold, deliciously sliced cocktail-style flavors. Pineapple Daiquiri, Strawberry Margarita, Mango Mai Tai, and Passion Fruit Hurricane. Visit CaptainMorgan.com to find Sliced near you. Does not contain real fruit or juice. Captain Morgan & Co., Plainfield, Illinois. Please drink responsibly. 21 plus only.
All right, and we are back. So as I said at the top of the show, Purdue basketball had a fantastic weekend. Currently, they're ranked number 6th, went into the Hall of Fame Championship Tip-Off Classic Bonanza Bazaar, and they faced North Carolina on Saturday following the Northwestern victory, and they walked out with a 93-84 victory over the number 18-ranked Tar Heels. And it was the fourth game of the season, and it was the fourth time Purdue had scored over 90 points. So the offense has just been humming, looked really great. This was also the last game of the season that did not have Mason Gillis, as he was set to come back for the championship game should Purdue win. So, Casey, this was obviously a pretty great game. It was the first real test that Purdue has had this season, and they passed it with flying colors, walking out with a 9-point win. So, who stood out or what stood out to you in this game? I have a feeling I know what you're about to say, though.
Well, if you read my game wrap,
I don't read the website. It's mostly trash.
That's fair. This was a game in three parts. It was a Shakespearean tragedy for North Carolina. But
I was going to say, not for us. We walked out with a victory.
For North Carolina. But, I mean, this was literally a game of three players, which makes sense because we had three guys score 20 points for the first time since 1997. And it started off with Sasha. Came out blazing on fire, really has an expanded game where he can make shots at the most difficult of angles. Starting to look a little bit like Ryan Klein out there, making off-balance shots.
High praise. That's high praise. Yeah.
And then obviously in the second half, Jaden Ivey had his moment, the first of many this season. Took over as a playmaker even more than just scoring points. But he did drop 22 points, hit two threes. Those plays he made in transition, particularly finding Sasha for an open three, finding shooters and players all around big time. And then we saw Trey Williams, the closer, something we've seen throughout his career. Late in the game, there's no one better to just give him the ball. They left North Carolina through the whole game, pretty much left him one-on-one. He got in foul trouble early, so he couldn't take advantage of it. But late in the game, he just freaking cooked the Tar Heel. Fouled two players out, continuously gave that little shimmy inside or a quick little thing to the baseline where he's so good with that right hand off the glass. And those three players, like, they each had their moment. They stepped up to the stage, each of them just beautiful playmaking, scoring, And it was just an all-around great team performance.
Yeah, and of course, Ivy ended up with a double-double, 22 and 10. He also dished out 6 assists. He only had 1 turnover.
That was a career high for him on assists one day.
Well, right. But, I mean, when he plays well, he is one of the most electric players that Painter has probably had on the team the entire time he's been at Purdue, because he can just do anything. And his first step is so fast that, you know, we saw him do these things against North Carolina and Villanova as well. But when you can just take your man off the dribble like he does against this top tier talent, it really gives you hope that he can continue this throughout Big Ten season, throughout, you know, Big Ten tournament and into the NCAA tournament, to show that he's a big time player and he is going to be able to make a big time play when Purdue needs it.
Yeah. You talked about, he has a sense of the moment. Purdue was reeling, and what does he do? It doesn't start with offense. He goes and attacks the defensive rebound. 10 of them. And every time he grabs the ball, he is an instant transition all on his own. He's that fast. He's that explosive. And we have seen it now throughout this entire season. That opens up easy buckets for other players. That gets our offense going. And all of a sudden, in 40 seconds, we have a 9-0 run.
Yeah. And it was in this game where he had the back-to-back dunks, correct?
Back-to-back dunks. One was off a not even transition. He just got the ball, and two guys were just kind of like a little bit jogging upfield or up court. Yeah,
they looked a little lazy.
And he just goes, all right, boosters. Boom. Next one, he did what we saw at the U19. Cut off a passing angle, took it to the house. Incredible display of athleticism.
Yeah, and not only does that hype up your team, but it turns and demoralizes your opponent, because he scored those 4 points so fast. And it was at a stage in the game when it was a little bit iffy of what Purdue was going to do. But you take those 4 points, emphatic points, and it really hypes your team up and can bring the team down, bring your opponent down. And it hyped up the Purdue crowd, which is always good at these weird neutral site games where you never really know what the atmosphere is going to be like.
No, Purdue fans always travel well, but more so you just trust when you're on the court and you know you have the best player on the court, there is a comfort level because you know you're never going to just get like ran off a court. And Jaden Ivey's that guy. He's special. Not many people can turn ordinary plays or a rebound into an advantage that quickly. And when he puts those boosters on, when he's in the zone like that, and now with the way he's passing that we've seen, especially these last two games, it's not just about him. He can get his shooters going too. And that is really effective for a team full of guys that know how to score the ball.
Yeah. The only thing, well, I guess I should say two things that stand out to me about the North Carolina game that I did not love. Purdue got out-rebounded 31-37. Yeah, you never like to see that. Purdue was only able to grab 4 offensive rebounds compared with 12 for North Carolina. Some of that may be, you know, the type of shots they take. Some are easier to rebound than others. But go ahead.
It was officiating. Almost all of Trey and Edie's fouls were on rebound. They didn't allow them to really be aggressive because they were so much bigger than North Carolina's guys. North Carolina guys did a good job putting bodies on them, but pretty much any iffy call on rebounds, you saw Edie or Trey getting an over-the-back call. And I really thought that kind of set the table for that, where they weren't able to be aggressive on the boards, especially Edie, who doesn't need to go over the back to grab a rebound, but any time that he went up for a rebound, there seemed to be a whistle.
Yeah, yeah, and they've got to learn to adjust to that, because officiating crews in the NCAA can be hit or miss, and they can be so different from one game to the next, and they've got to be used to these situations and see how they can adjust and make sure they can stay on the floor. Because obviously, even though, you know, not that they're interchangeable, but when you have two centers like Edie and Williams, you want to make sure that at least one of them is going to be with you the entirety of the game. And when Williams wound up with 4 fouls in that North Carolina game, it kind of gives you an idea of maybe Purdue might have to play without one of them at a time in the future. And we want to be able to continue to play a good offense in a situation where one of them has to be out for the entirety. So The officiating is always a problem for big guys, and when Purdue has big guys pretty much all the time under Matt Painter, it can cause some drama. So it's always frustrating.
You touched on the one thing that I took out of that game, which is what does happen when we have to play without a center? We found out, because with 8:26 left, Trey caught a second foul. Edie and Trey stayed on the bench from that point forward. The score when he fouled and went to the bench, 24-18, 6-point lead for Purdue. The rest of the half, we just let first play center. That's a big task. Those big men for North Carolina are good. That's a good team they played. And we finished the half 41-35. We kept that 6-point lead even with him with just first on the court. And if I think we expected this from Ivy. We knew what Edie was. We knew what Trey was. I think what we learned from this weekend is first is a stud.
Yeah, he's been incredible.
He's not just good for a true freshman.
No, he's good for anybody on the team. I mean, he played 32 minutes against North Carolina. A freshman on a team this talented and this deep, and Painter's asking him to play 32 out of 40 minutes. That's incredible. I mean, he had the third most minutes on the team behind only Stefanovic with 35 and Ivy with 34. So he's been better, I think, than either of us imagined he could be.
And we were both very high on him throughout the whole offseason. Yeah. We watched him at U19. We say he's a perfect player to play next to our bigs. Perfect four. Turns out he's just perfect.
Yeah.
There's no qualifier to it. He is incredibly big, moves. It is uncanny how well he moves for how big he is.
Yeah. You look at him as he moves on the floor, and you would be shocked when you see actually how tall he is. What is he officially listed at?
6'10". He's a legit 6'10". Yeah.
So you just watch him play, and you'd think he was more 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
And to have that ability is just great. So, I mean, he played great, and it kind of transitions us right into today's game, Purdue versus Villanova, which was a dogfight, an absolute dogfight. Purdue came out and took a lead early and held it for the majority of the first half. And then Villanova kept chipping away. The lead got down to single digits, got down to one or two. And then with just a few minutes left in the first half, Villanova took the lead and went into halftime 33-31. And we kind of got that feeling that we as Purdue fans get of, you know, the other team is shooting well from deep. We can't seem to cover, you know, the corner three. We're missing our shots now. And Villanova just seems to have shooters all over the place. And it got me a little worried. Casey, how worried were you when Villanova started to really turn up the pressure there?
I mean, there were some people on Twitter that called me out after a few tweets.
I saw that.
And they're not wrong, because I went straight to the dogma. We are a very – Coach Painter, for the longest time, had this hat put on him that he was a great defensive coach and the offense needed. For the last 10 years or so, our offense has been pretty much better than our defense. We have a great offensive system, and I've always liked his offense a lot more than the credit he seemed to get. Defensively, we're very rigid.
We
play the same system. We allow bigs to shoot. We overhelp. We kind of play the numbers that we're not going to get burnt on jump shot. The first half of this game, first half of the second half especially, we got burnt on jump shots. I was like, great, we're not adjusting. This is what happens. Teams get hot against us and we don't really have something to go to on defense. But Painter always talks about, look, this is the best way to play defense. You have to trust the numbers. And it worked out.
Yeah.
Our offense got hot and their legs got tired. They play seven players.
Exactly. That was what I wanted to point out. I mean, Purdue played.
He's smarter than me, guys, today.
Well,
he's
obviously
smarter than me. Okay.
So
I need to not freak out. Like they played seven players. They played six.
Did they only play six?
They played seven. Arkadiankado.
Oh yeah, he only played five minutes. Yeah. So I mean, their starting five played 37 minutes, 40 minutes, 38 minutes, 36, and 24. That's coming off a day where they just played the day before against Tennessee. Again, Tennessee no slouch themselves. They're also ranked in the top 25. So it's a very quick turnaround. And yes, these guys are young. They're in much better shape than Casey and I. But the fact is, that'll ultimately catch up with you. And when you're asking your starters to play 37, 36, 40 minutes, your legs will get a little tired in the second half. And I think that's what we saw probably at around 6 or 7 minutes left in the second half. You noticed Villanova was just a little slower. Their shots weren't falling and their free throws, especially their free throw percentage just plummeted as the second half went on.
Yeah. And you could tell they were a little worn out, not getting the same looks, but also, Purdue definitely tightened up on defense. We were just getting lost on screens. We were letting way too many. It is a it's a Euro concept of this. You pretty much, you muddy up your guard in the middle and then set a screen straight out.
Yeah, what did they
out.
Call it? The Spanish screen or
what? Yeah.
I'd
Kramer
never
had
heard
a name
that
for it. Yeah. It's something you see in FIBA ball a lot. And pretty much you're just using the tendencies to think when you're setting a screen inside, you're expecting the shooter to go to the corner, spread it out. Instead, they kind of use that muck to get up and get straight up and open. And it worked. It worked a lot. We didn't do a great job tracking those screens. We didn't do a great job getting in those shooters' face. And we also left, especially for the first two-thirds of the game, just wide open shooters in the corner on every drive. And we can't defend that. If you're going to give up a three-point shot, it's got to be somewhere else than the easiest three-point on the court. So I think we definitely have to tighten up, but our defense did get better at the end, started getting a hand up, and you could see that it's going to wear on teams to play us.
Yeah.
Which is a good feeling.
Exactly. And I did look it up on Twitter. It's apparently called the Spanish pick and roll, which is the normal pick and roll with a back screen, which is what they were running and apparently just gave Purdue fits. So, again, being able to play 10 men deep as Purdue did with Mason Gillis back. Gillis, by the way, played 10 minutes, one rebound. He only took one shot, missed it. I mean,
are we ready to have a Gillis discussion?
Sure.
I think you know where I'm going to go with because I made a comment.
The fact that he's never going to start again if Caleb Furse is on the team?
Beyond that, I think he's
I'm not sure where you're going.
I think he's our 10th man.
Oh.
In theory, Morton got 8 minutes, played less.
You're right.
I think Morton's better for this team than Gillis.
I mean, you know I love Ethan Morton, so I'm not going to argue that. But
there is a rigidness to Mason Gillis's offense. The only thing he is a spot-up shooter.
And he's also, I mean, he gets those dirty work extra putbacks.
He does.
I
just don't know how valuable that is next to Edie and Trey.
Yes, exactly. And when you have a guy like First who does that but also adds other things.
If anything, I would rather play First 30-some minutes than to even get Gillis the minutes he got today. I know that's not feasible for a whole season, but
No, especially as your freshman year. I mean, First will eventually hit a wall this season. All freshmen seem to, and that's, I think, when Gillis will be most valuable to Purdue, but I don't think you're necessarily wrong.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. First didn't hit a wall today. We haven't quite discussed this yet because that true freshman went 5 of 5 from the field. Only 3 rebounds today, only 1 assist, 1 turnover, but 5 of 5 from the field. That stretch where Ivy took over again, it was this time 3 straight assists. They were all to First, and First showed off everything that he does incredibly well. First off, the just easy dunk that Ivy created for him. And then in transition, it was a 4-on-2 with the two defenders down low. And I thought Ivy did First kind of dirty. He gave him the ball real late and with two guys kind of slopped in front of him.
I remember that.
I don't know how First finished. Like, incredible just, like, speed and balance.
Yeah.
And then open corner three, that's the one place First has struggled to shoot.
Yes, he's not. His 3-point percentage so far this year has not been great, but he certainly buried that one.
Well, yeah, in the corner, we've seen him hit the side of the backboard a couple times. He's been good from up top. So it was nice to see him knock that down. But that ball, when First caught that pass earlier in the game in the corner, drove by his man baseline, Euro stepped around the big, took contact, and then finished with his offhand. There's not more than like a handful of bigs in the country that can make that play. And he's a true freshman.
He's been incredible. Again, I mean, he's been better than either of us could have imagined. But before, you know, we go on to something else, I think it's right that I call you out for your lack of faith in Isaiah Thompson.
Go ahead.
I'll let you defend yourself before I thrash you.
Are you talking about last year's?
No. Well, I mean, of course. So we did the player profiles in the offseason.
Yeah.
And you basically said, you know, you were hoping he's not playing more than 10 or 15 minutes.
I was dead wrong.
And he today played 21 minutes. Obviously, he was a starter. 4 for 5 from 3. And granted, he had two turnovers. No real other stats, not a great rebounder. You don't expect him to be, but 4 of 5 from 3, 12 points, and those were big threes. I said on Twitter that he's kind of taken over for his brother, PJ Thompson, who was the big shot maker in many games when he was at Purdue. So Thompson, I think, has just been great so far this season. But I think to your credit, he's doing what you asked him to do, because Painter is not asking him to do too terribly much. We're asking him to be the spot-up shooter, hit the shots where he's open, and really that's what he's done. So you weren't wrong. He seems to have exceeded what you expected him to be.
Yeah, so he started off the game very poorly. Couple defensive miscues, a bad turnover. But in that second half, that was the best he's ever played defensively. I thought he really got after Gillespie, especially late. So that was encouraging to see, that play where he got knocked down on the screen and still got up to force Gillespie to move the ball on the perimeter.
Right,
that was a
right.
really big play. And yeah, he's got a knack for making shots, and it definitely came up today. He's better than Eric Hunter now. It's not a mystery. It's very clear he took the starting job from Eric Hunter, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
He does things on offense. Hunter does not.
It's kind of fascinating to see the change from last year to this year in both Eric Hunter Jr. and Brandon Newman. Hunter had 19 minutes. Newman only had 12. And those two were such integral pieces last year that I wonder how that is going to play with them, you know, mentally and emotionally, because college basketball is a rough sport. It's a long season. There's a lot and a big mental aspect to it. And, you know, Trevion Williams has talked about how he just wants the team to win. If you're worried about minutes, you know, this isn't the place for you. And he's come off the bench and he's played great so far this year. And I hope that Hunter and Newman have that same attitude, because they're probably not playing as much as they want and they're not contributing as much as they want. Certainly there will be a time in the future, there will be a game where each of them step up and make a big difference. But for right now, they're getting a little bit lost in the shuffle.
I think the one thing with Newman, it's easier because he has 2 years left. He's going to step in. It's going to be his role next year, almost for sure. Sasha's leaving, Hunter's leaving, and he's the clear next sharpshooter in line. Hunter, it's a little more difficult. He's been here a while. He's a senior, but he's also never given us any indication he's nothing but a great kid. Does
yeah,
what
absolutely.
He needs to do. So I'm not worried about it. And I think that's the one benefit, but even bigger benefit. Trey Williams is an All-American. And he's playing from the bench. If he's not going to complain about it and play hard, you don't have an excuse not to.
Right. Yeah, that is true. And I mean, Trevion has acted as such a leader of this team, both on and off the court. You know, his attitude is infectious. I'm not sure if you saw the clip of the team receiving the trophy, but this tournament was sponsored by Cheez-Its,
yeah.
as you saw on the floor. And
just
so
like
they gave
a shitty snack.
I mean, I'm fine with them. They're not my favorite. I will not go out and buy them. My wife loves them. There's actually a box in my cabinet. I don't really eat them. But they gave him the trophy, and Sasha was carrying it around. And I don't know if it came with the Cheez-Its in the bowl, or if someone – because there were also individual
you
bags
think one of
Cheez-Its.
Players did it?
Well, I'm wondering
if
someone –
It would be Trey,
opened,
right?
Probably. I'm wondering – but – Here's why I don't think it was him. I think it came like that because the video so shows Sasha, that's a hard thing to say, carrying around the trophy, and he showed the trophy to Trey, and it had the Cheez-Its in it, and Trey's like, oh, and picked one out and grabbed it and like gave a thumbs up to the camera and like had a good time. So I think his attitude and just what he brings to this team, in addition to what he does on the floor, should be a good lesson for guys like Hunter and guys like Newman, who maybe aren't getting the minutes that they've hoped for, that, you know, just go out there and do what you're going to do and things will happen for you. And Painter obviously notices when people put in the work, and he will reward them as the season goes on.
Trey got to close down the North Carolina game.
Yeah.
It was his game. He got the ball every time. That's going to be the case more often than not. Tonight, Edie stayed in. Edie was playing well. They had no answer for his size. This is just how it's going to be. Yeah, you earn your minutes. This is a team collective. Everyone's been here before. They've all tasted disappointment. They're not going to be petty enough game to game, because they know at some point it's their time to step up. And if they do it, they will get rewarded. Painter has never been anything but fair.
Yeah.
Our leading minute getters in this giant game against the top five opponent, Ivy and Stevanovic, they both only played 33 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one else played more than 24.
And it's worth pointing out how great Zach Edey played. Only played 19 minutes, but he was 9 of 12 and 3 for 3 at the line. 6 rebounds, wound up with 21 points, leading scorer for the game. And I mean, he just dominated the beginning of the game. He had 6 points and three rebounds in about 3.5 minutes and really set the tone for what Villanova needed to do on defense. And that was try to stop the bigs. And that hopefully would allow guys like Sasha and guys like Isaiah Thompson to get those open threes that, you know, it was hit or miss. They had some runs in the beginning and then they really turned it on again in the second half. But this team is just so complete. And even when it looks like they're out of it, when, you know, they were down 10, I think the biggest lead for Villanova might have been 11.
10 points.
Oh, it was only 10. Okay.
They got to 10 twice.
Okay. But, I mean, even at that point, you do have that thing in the back of your head like, hey, we're not out of this. We've got a lot of talent. We can turn it around. And sure enough, you know, Purdue went on that 14-4 run, I believe it was. And then suddenly they're back in the lead and then just closed it out. And kudos here to Eric Hunter Jr., who went 3-for-4 at the line to kind of salt the game away as it ticked down.
Yeah, Eric Hunter came up big with some free throws. I think we have to mention, it would be a disservice not to say Trey Williams defensively. That was a game where they were attacking us small, and Trey was as engaged and quick and on the ball as I've seen him defensively.
Yeah, he had very active hands.
Yeah, three steals, and was just able to like really cut down some guys on the perimeter, able to cut off some danger down at the hoop, just really good. And a combination of him engaging like that to take on small lineups, and then Edie is just this cheat code that we're never going to get really blown out. We're never going to get the game far away. We're going to start well because no one has an answer for him, and he's just easy buckets at the start of each half.
Yeah.
And that just helps a game not slip away. It helps. Go ahead.
No, I was just amazed how many times today trying to get the ball to Edie, we threw it too high for Edie on at least three occasions. Like, how do you overthrow Edie? He's 7'4", and he lifts his arms up, and it's like 9 feet.
Two of the times are because Edie got caught with the guy underneath him to the point that he couldn't reach up. So it looked worse and weirder than it was.
Yeah, but that's
it,
probably
it was just that he was in a position where he couldn't fully stretch up because they were kind of hitting him low.
Yeah. And I think it's worth pointing out that this Villanova team is damn good. They're incredibly disciplined on both offense and defense. They wound up with just 4 turnovers on the entire game, 4 turnovers, none in the
Villanova's
first half.
Villanova's really good.
They are
they
so
are
good.
Really good.
I mean, Jay Wright, great coach, had this team ready to go. If they had better depth, this is probably a different game. But with only playing, like you said, 7 guys, but really 6 because of only 5 minutes by that other guy, it just wore them down, I believe, playing against our 10-man rotation. So if Villanova could find a couple other guys to throw in there, it'll be a completely different game.
Yeah, but this is a time of year usually where your rotation is bigger. It usually shrinks going forward into the season.
Yeah.
You don't develop players in the season. Beginning of the year, you play all the guys you think might be ready and find out which ones are and aren't. So the fact they were playing the second game of a back-to-back and they didn't stretch their lineup any more than that, that would give me worry if I'm a Villanova fan. For Purdue, we added our 10th player. That is a good sign for success in the season going forward. And then, you know, when we get to tournament, we can worry about, you know, we're going to get better when we're playing first closer to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
When we're playing right now, Thompson closer to 30 minutes.
Yeah, no. And no kidding.
I once again, I was impressed by Morton when he came in. Only played 8 minutes. I thought he gave us good minutes.
I did too.
He's a weird player. His size and the way he plays, and he's looking to push it. And I like that. With a team full of shooters. So you never know when he's going to grab a rebound, and him pushing it forward just kind of creates some open space.
Yeah, he's aggressive, but he's also smart.
Gillis wasn't good, but he hasn't played, you know, basketball like this to start the season. He doesn't have 3 games under his belt, so I imagine he gets better. His shot, you know, he only took the one shot and airballed it, but that's going to come along a little better, you got to hope. So
And it's hard to come in your first game against Villanova, you know, and just be thrown in there. He didn't get to go up against Bellarmine and kind of get his feet wet. He just got thrown against the number 5 team in the nation.
It's why I thought he might not play. I thought there might have been a little bit of painter, like, you know what, we've got a thing going. We'll go play him against Omaha. But he played, he got his feet a little wet, and we won the game. And how are you not encouraged by this Purdue team that just, we got an extra gear that most teams don't have, that Purdue teams don't normally have. And it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people mentioned it on Twitter and in other places that people, you know, send us comments, that these are the kind of games that Purdue generally loses. You know, they go into these big early season tournaments against big names and they come up just short, but we walk away like, hey, you know, we hung with them. We looked really good, blah, blah, blah. But tonight, or today, Purdue walked away with a victory, and it just says that we can really keep up with anybody. So, Casey, any final thoughts?
I think we covered it. We got a big week ahead of us when it comes to football. And then the one thing with basketball, we're about to play. It's a really bad team we're playing.
Oh, Omaha.
Omaha.
Yeah, I know nothing about them other than I'm looking at their logo, and it's a red O that's red halfway and black halfway. That's all I know about Omaha.
So right now they're not actually the worst team we have left because we also play Incarnate Word again.
Ah, good. Good, good, good.
But right now, Ken Palm has us winning 88-56, 99.8% win chance.
I take that. I think that's probably low.
322nd team in
there. Nice. So, I mean, we don't really have a lot to say about Omaha. Probably not something we're going to stress about, but we will be back with you middle of the week. We're going to talk about the Purdue versus Indiana game, and we will also probably give you a little bit on Omaha because that will come out before – that game will be after the podcast comes out.
Friday game.
There you go. So, for Casey and myself, let's enjoy this great Boilermaker sport weekend. And Casey, I'm going to let you sign off like we've been doing lately.
How about them Boilers?
Boiler up.